Mr. Richards Reel 2.
It was on the big ambulances, they had seats in them as well, which we could put some of the people on it. And just to make sure that they couldn't fall, we used to put a strap round one of the straps we had in the ambulances so they don't fall over. And then everything was going on from then onwards, like.
So when you got to the hut, you had to choose yourself who to take, did you?
No, we didn't choose. The people that the officers had figured out, there was one side of the hut. The others was being inspected over this side. And the officers used to say, take anybody you want from there. What ambulance you got? Got two stretchers. Right, take two from there. So we took two. Well, then on one occasion, one of them was fairly bad, and this was coming out, my ambulance orderly turned around, he says, look, can we put one of these on the floor in between the stretchers? Was there nothing to do about that, is it? We can't hold them in position unless you're going to stop in the back and hold them. So he said, no, he said, we've been lucky so far, so we haven't got nothing at all yet, he says, but if you get in with them, we might catch it. He said, so just leave it there. We asked an officer, and I said to him, why do they one of these patients on a blanket on the floor, in between the stretchers? Yes, he said, if you want to. So we started doing that. And we were taking three at a time then, on our own shelf, right? So then some of the bigger ones, the big Austins, they got the four stretchers in, and they had enough room between the stretchers to get another two on it. So then we got told off at our own place when we got back. Instead of taking four in, we were taking six in. Well, instead of me taking two in, I was taking three in. And I said, no, you're upsetting everything that way. We're concerned how many vehicles are coming in, how many people we're going to get. So they worked according to that. So we had to stop that. So you just go back to normal and four.
How did you choose the people to take?
Well, we never. The officer's done that.
But didn't they say that you take anybody from that side?
From that side, yes.
But then did you choose?
No, we just went down and pointed out three people, out they come. There was no names, no nothing at all. Just, we were sorry that we couldn't get all of them out at once. We'd have done far better, I reckon, if we'd have had one of our big trucks down here. Where you could put them all on, lay them all on the stretchers along the floor of the trucks. You could get more out that way. But then again, when we started doubling up sort of thing, when we got back to the hospital itself, we was told, don't do that because you're overrunning them.
Were the inmates pleading with you to take them rather than somebody else?
Oh, yes, they were all putting their hands up. I'm next, and some of them even right in the back. They were shouting out, take me, take me. I mean, you couldn't. You went to the front lot and said, right, you come out, you come out, you come out. And that was it.
So what was the inside of these huts like?
Oh, they was all crammed up with double-tier bunks. And there's just enough room to get down between the bunks to get up into the bunk itself. There's just enough room. Well, I should imagine there's about 28 to 30 bunks down one side, all on top of each other. And halfway up the other wall, there was more there as well. And everybody was fighting each other for clothes. Any clothes what was laying around, they grabbed for them, right, you know. But all that had to be stripped off. Just a minute, got the tape on.
Did you dread going into the huts?
Oh, no. No, you see, myself, well, I suppose every one of us was the same. But myself, I wasn't worried too much about that. We were scared. They've got the typhus, dysentery and everything else there. We're scared about that. But at the same time, we were disinfected fully.
How did they disinfect you?
with this big spray, Dad. Big spray, so put it down your neck and spray you all over and down the back of your neck and everything, up your arms. You was more or less covered in this
powder.
A powder, like, you know. Then he could walk in and out there as free as you like. But I wasn't to myself only, but I suppose the others were the same. But I'd been through quite a lot like that down at the East End. And was myself then was to get him out as quick as possible. Because I knew what he was like in there. The smell in there was terrible. It wasn't different people like. And you get him out quick. And it was all right. We was glad when we come out. Got in the ambulance and away again.
Did you ever speak to any of the inmates?
They couldn't understand you. Could just ask one or two of them, you know, when did you go in? Just shook their heads. A lot of them were saying, pointed to their fingers, and watches they had on. All kaput. Germans took them all off, like, you know. So well, I don't remember not talking to anybody who understood our language or we understood them. All they was concerned about was let's get to the ambulances and get out, like, you know.
Did they know who you were?
Oh, we had our berets on. They knew we were British. Because so, the berets we had on, my one was Service Corps and the other one's the RAMC. So, and they knew the difference between the two of us. When the RAMC man went in there, they all rushed to him. As soon as he put them on one side, checked them all over and sent them over there, when that Service Corps man went in, they rushed over to him. I'm first, like, you know. Well, they didn't say I'm first, they just me, like, you know.
What were the ages of the people there? What were the ages of
all sorts. There was elderly people there, youngsters, little youngsters.
How old were the youngsters?
That 4 to 5 year old. That's all. There's any amount of them in the pit as well. But they're through in the pits.
Was there anything special that you could do for the children?
No, nothing. The only thing we could do, there's one or two of them on the photo. On one of the photos with the chap who was in charge of us.
A big what, sorry? A big what?
No, the chap who was in charge of us, the whole camp itself, not our own officers, but another chap who was appointed somewhere else. He's standing at the side of a swing with a girl on it, and I think he's holding her hand. But they used to supply sweets for them, most of them. And the... Apart from that, they was only people who got any preferential treatment, like, you know.
Were the inmates in a dirty condition?
No. It's a funny thing is they was all clean, every one of them. There was plenty of water there, and they used to get under these big shower baths and wash themselves down, like, you know. And the nobody bothered about anything there. They was walking around naked most of the time, like, you know. And then they dressed themselves back into the huts. And when the medical corps went in there, they said, take everything off. Well, everybody took everything off. I said, as soon as they started undressing one, examiner, or he, whichever it was, everybody else done the same thing.
Was their hair shaved off?
In about half a dozen cases, that's all we saw. But the rest of them made quite good air, like, you know.
The infantry you mentioned, do you know what unit they belong to?
No, I told you, it's such a long while ago now that I don't remember. There was one or two artillery men amongst them as well. We could tell by the badges, like. The engineers, they called in after, was putting up the towers, water towers, and they brought the bulldozers in, and I don't really know the name of the people or the battalions, what was in, what came in with us,
Once you got got them out of the camp, what happened when you unloaded them at the other end?
Well, we unloaded them at our own place, like at the Belsen, the SS camp. Then it was transferred into the hospital inside the camp itself. Because by that time, we cleared all the German prisoners out, took them up further back down the road. And that was filled up. Well, they checked back onto it and they found that there's nothing more we could do there. But we were pulled out for a couple of days' rest. We were pulled out into our field, and this other chap went in, another unit went in. What I can gather from Mrs. Ellett was that this Dr. Wendt was in the 216. 216 ambulance.
What was the hospital like that you were taking them to?
Oh, it's a normal hospital, a German hospital. They used to put their own SS men in there, like. And it looked fully equipped. Our chap liked it very much when they saw it. So, and what they was doing then was making sure they got everybody on this different food that was giving them, not allowed to eat nothing solid, just on fluids all the time. And they was there for about 2 or 3 days, then they started walking about. But then they put them onto solid food then. And then we don't know what happened from there, where they went from there. Because we wasn't allowed in the camp at all, not in the big camp. We had to go back to our own field.
Did they seem relieved to get to the hospital?
Oh, yeah. Directly when they took them in, laid them on the stretchers, and the first thing you get a look on their face when they got these scrubbing brushes. And the orderly said, well, we're not going to hurt you. We just want to get everything off. They just started brushing down with the scrubbing brushes, cleaning them all up like, and then put extra water over them, disinfect them, wrap them up in blankets, put them on a stretcher, and then across the road to the hospital.
Did any of them die on the way in the ambulances?
No, not as far as I know. I don't think we lost any of them. Some of them was pretty bad, I know, when we come out. But as far as we were concerned, we never lost any at all. Unless anybody died while he was back in the hospital, and they went back in there. Because a lot of them, they was in very bad condition, quite a lot of them.
In what way?
Well, they didn't care what happened. They just lay there like that, you know, flopping all over the place. And I said to the ambulance orderly at one time, I said, it's a waste of time taking him back, isn't it? Yeah, he said, we've got to take him back, don't we? So back they went.
You felt they were going to die anyway?
Oh, yeah, yes. I said, well, I don't know myself. How many might have died in that hospital? I don't know, don't really know. There should have been quite a few, what we saw and what we took out, right? Seems that the dysentery mostly killed them. Not so much the typhus, but it's the dysentery what killed them. They had such a... Well, sometimes they never had any food at all.
Did you see anything of the SS camp apart from the hospital?
Oh, the only time we saw it was that when we went into there, the big barracks and that, and then we was out for a week to come out of the camp itself. Then we never went back in there no more. We was told to go down to the camp itself, the SS camp, and had a cinema there. We used to go down to there for a night time, right? Well, then, a couple of days after that, we was told that we get all our kit, all the lot, throw it in your ambulances, and they was all taken off and burnt, all the lot of them. Your kit, everything else. They was destroyed all the lot. But then they says to us, well, one or two of them said, what the chance of them leave? So they said, well, we've got two choices. You can go back to England, but if you get back to England on leave, you've been 6 months in quarantine before you're allowed to go anywhere. On the other hand, we can send you to Norway, you'll stay there for 6 weeks, 6 months, then you can go home. So I said, well, might just as well go to Norway. If we go at home in England, is that going to put something in the shop for you? And so if we're going up there, not allowed to go out anywhere, you might as well go to Norway. In Norway, they said we can do anything we like. So we opted to go to Norway.
Whereabouts in Norway did you go to?
Near Oslo. So
was it a special camp?
Oh, no, no. It was just accommodated places, I took. They took a couple of big halls. A lot of them went into there. We had our own regular church prayer sort of thing, and prayed and everything else.
what condition was Norway in?
Well, we didn't know what we were going to do. Because when we landed, they put us in an aircraft, flew us over there, and as we got out of the planes, there was quite a crowd of Norwegians there, and a lot of them were spitting at us.
Why?
All the time. Don't know why. And, you know, we looked at them, right? But then we could understand what we were told after, that it was a sort of partisan. Some had been on the side of the Germans, and some had been on the side of the Allies. And the most people we saw up there, there were people who was on the German side, and they started spitting at us all the time, like, you know. But then we were put down, and we was also told, when we went out of the night, it'd got to be at least four of us together. And you take your rifles with you. Anything happens, let them have it, like, you know. But we never got no more problems after that. We was there for about 4 or 5 weeks, but then everybody else around here, we started getting friendly towards you, inviting you to have a cup of tea, because we was a bit dubious at first. We don't know who they are. Yeah. And then after a little while, we said, well, I've got a mate with me, I'll fetch him in and all, like. So we go in, and it was all right then.
Did they tell you anything about what the German occupation had been like?
Well, they meant it was terrible there. There's quite a lot of them there. We saw more girls there with their heads shaved in Norway than what there was at Belsen itself. Everywhere you looked, you could see the girls with their heads shaved, like, you know, they'd been taking part with the Germans and that. So we had one there. I think it was a Norwegian chap. They had to fetch him out of the river. They found him in the river, and he had some stab wounds or something on him. And, well, it was my turn, I was on duty that morning, and they had to go and fetch him out of the river. Well, then the officer in charge, he conducted a post-mortem, and he says to me, do you want to look? I said, well, I've not seen one before. Have a look, he says. I was standing there for a while. Then when he got a sword, the sword across the top of his head, I just went out like that. That's how I get him out. I finish up outside.
You fainted, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. But it wasn't. And what turned me was the fact that he saw this sword, he's cutting it across the top of his head. You know, and I thought, out of went.
The top of his head had been sawn off, had it?
Oh, no. No, that was part of the post-mortem.
Oh, I see.
That was part, he wanted to have a look at the brain.
Why had this chap been killed, do you know?
Nobody knows. They made inquiries, but nobody knew anything about it. We thought it was one of the British Tommies at first, when they said there was a soldier of war. Somebody had been found in a hut in the stream. So we went down there and we looked over the top, and it was on his face, like. And one chap says, looks like a British Tommy, doesn't it? And when they fished him out, they said, no. His face was different, you know. His face seemed similar to the other people we'd seen in Norway.
Now, coming back to Belsen, did you see anything of the other parts of the camp, apart from the hut?
Only the gas chambers. We went down and had a look around there, and all we could see there was charred bones, right the way through there. And even those on the outside, when they was finished with them, a just big heap of charred bones lying there, like, you know.
How big were the heaps?
Oh, about 5 to 6 foot high. And after looking at a couple of them, we didn't want to know no more. Didn't want to go through no more of it. And then they had another lot further down. Well, those that was going to be burnt, they was put in these sort of compounds. And they was being burnt the following day, sort of thing, you know.
What did the gas chambers themselves look like?
Well, not the gas chambers, they was incinerators. They was like a big oval thing with a big door in the front. And they used to open them out, throw them in, and that was that. And they'd just stay there, and they had about 12 to 14 of them, all lined up along there. And they just used to put them in there, and then the ashes used to drop through the bottom, and used to rake it out. Used to get the prisoners to rake out the ashes. The guys standing there all the time watching.
Did you see any gas chambers?
I've never seen none, not down there. They might have had some there, I don't know. Because we turned, as soon as we saw the incinerators, turned us all over, like, you know. We didn't want to go no further, like.
Did you see any possessions that had been taken from the inmates?
Oh, no, that was all there. I did hear, I won't be sure, though, I did hear that in Cramer's place, they found a big chest full of rings, watches, teeth which they pulled out, gold teeth. It was all in there, all the lot. And we was wondering what was going to happen to it. Because Cramer couldn't get it, because he was away then. And when they searched his place, they found it. That's a great big chest full of them. False teeth, everything else like.
You saw Cramer, did you?
Saw Cramer, yeah, yeah.
What did he look like?
Horrible.
In what way?
So you could see on his face that he was a sort of sadist. See, if ever you see them photos, he's on one of them, and Irma Greaves as well. On that, unless that's what some have been told, I don't know. But they're on them photos as well. And he wasn't worried, not even when he was caught. I mean, what the infantry done at first, to keep him under lock and key, I'm not sure the officer was in, but they put him in a freezer, what was there. Put him inside the freezer and shut the door. Well, we heard about that after. But fortunate for him, one of the officers walked in, looking all around, and the chap says, what are you looking for? He said, the commandant. He says, he was here a little while ago. Oh, we want him there. Oh, he said, we've got him in here. No, you don't want him in here. Fetch him out. And he was just like that when they come out, almost frozen. And then he was taken away somewhere else, like, you know. But he wasn't allowed out. Well, the first day we were there, when they caught him, it was actually the first day out. Irma Greaves was allowed out. But he was allowed out in a little compound around a little hut they had there. Three guards all the way around him all the time. And then he was put back in there. Then he was moved from there up to somewhere else. Because we was all glad to see him go then.
What did Irma Greaves look like?
Well, she looked fairly good. But you could see also in her face, in her eyes, it was as hard as anything. And when some of the prisoners come down, they looked at her and spit at her, and she went, you know, as much as I'd like to get over there and get hold of you, like, you know. And of course the guards used to say, get back, get back. And push both of them away from the fences.
What do you mean when you say that she looked quite good?
Well, she looked pretty enough. You know, but you could see on her eyes, those wide eyes sort of thing, and you could see the hatred or something behind them. As soon as you looked at them, you could see that. And there's another, well, about eight of them with her, but the one who was, whether it might have been a lieutenant or not, I don't know, but she was always smiling. She was always smiling to herself, and when anybody had to go home of Greece, she looked round at her like that and laughed. You know, as much as say, well, you've got what's coming now. And they just carried on walking. But she'd never leave her side. They was always together. They used to march up and down all the time. But that was the only one who was showing any sort of relief on her face.
Now, you talked about your disinfecting of you and your comrades. But did any of you get any diseases?
No, none of us did. Not one of us. And we put it down to the fact that we were disinfected, and we used to be inspected practically every week at camp, even before we went into Belsen.
Did you fear getting diseases?
Oh yes, naturally we feared it. Because we were looking all around and they was telling us, this is dysentery, that's typhus, and that's typhoid and that. And if you get anything like that, straight away you let us know. And we were watching all the time. And when we had the big field we was in, we had our own latrines at the back of the field, a big trench cut right along with a board on it. So if we wanted to go to the toilet, we could sit on the board, no closed in things or anything like that. You just sat on the board and do whatever you do. And every so often the officer used to come along and check it all over. Then they'd fill that lot in, and you start off again, like, you know.
Did it make you unwilling to touch the inmates?
Oh, no, no. No, it's what we could gather. I mean, we used to have to pick them up and put them on the stretchers. We weren't worried about that at all. Just pick them up and put them on there, put a blanket over them. There's nothing there at all to make us feel we were going to catch some of it anyway from them. They were so, well, the only chance you got is if you're in that hut with them, with about 50 or 60 people in that hut, that you're going to catch something. And they used to excrete and everything else all on the floor, and that was all about. But if you was in there, then you might get something. But the way we was going in, everything was ready for us for them to come out. You used to have people used to go in for morning and clear it all up before the officers went in. Clear it all up, got some of the inmates to clear it up as well. Then the officers went in and sorted out which ones they wanted. And that was that.
You were telling me earlier that you thought that the films that we've seen on television of Belsen don't really show what it was like.
No, some parts of what I saw was parts of Belsen. But it's quite a lot of Belsen. It,